Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, and welcome to Gaze on Film. This podcast is where we, a pair of gays, talk about what we're watching. I'm Ned.
And I'm Declan.
And in this episode, we'll be discussing Femme. Remember, there will be spoilers once we get to this week's headline feature, so as always, do proceed with caution. But before we get to that, Declan, please tell me what you've been watching.
So a few of the bits I can't say because we're going to do episodes on them. So it feels a bit light.
Is it not
light.
Even worth mentioning?
Well, I've seen Dune 2.
I was going to say I've done the Dunes.
Did
you rewatch Dune 1?
I did.
I did as well. What did you think?
Still really, 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 really like it.
Oh, yes. It stands the test of time.
When we do our Dune episode, Dune Part 2 episode coming soon, I feel like I'll discuss my... Not necessarily what to prefer, but like the two films together.
Should we do like a Dune special where we do both films in one? Or
I don't think so. Not at this stage.
What do you mean at this stage?
I just think we'll have enough to talk about Dune Part 2. And I mean, some of it will come back to Dune Part 1.
Yes. No,
so,
right.
Yeah, a few of the things we've seen, we're not necessarily... They're not going to be included in this, but I did a part two of another trilogy that I love. I watched Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers again, extended version, all 4 hours of it. Adore it, as always.
I didn't know you were watching the extended version.
Yeah, yeah. Neither did I until I looked at the runtime. I was like, I don't think that's the normal film runtime. So, yeah. We also got screeners for Sky Atlantic's new historical romp, Mary and George.
Oh my god, when we were watching it last night, I realised in our, like, review of 2023 episode, I said what I was hoping for from 2024 is a lot more, like, historical LGBT content.
Yes, you did,
from
yeah.
pre-1960s.
And it's
I think
true
we get a
story.
Lot of 60s
I'm sure
forwards.
There's been things
yeah.
added to tart it up a bit.
Oh, definitely.
But we've watched two episodes so far, and
it's
I really,
so
really like
fun.
It. It's one of those yeah. shows where it's like, it's a well-done show, but I think the best thing probably about it is how kind of good the script is. Like,
yeah, I think so far it's really well written, like hilarious, but very like sharp wit. And it's camp without being tacky, which I love as well.
Yeah,
it's like,
it
yeah,
is. Yeah.
You've got some really interesting characters in there.
Julianne Moore is amazing as
yes.
Mary. I just think she's no fucks given. She knows how to play the system. And I think that's so interesting when anyone
yeah.
within kind of a historical court or within kind of, you know, within society knows how to play the system. I always think that's really interesting. Obviously, it's quite gay.
Quite gay. Is he the one from Red, White and Royal Blue?
Yeah, Nicholas Galitzine, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah, he plays the prince in that, doesn't he?
He does, yes. So, and I think he's doing quite... I think we wrote in our review that we put on Instagram, he is more than just the... I mean, he's beautiful. But
hot
he's more
bod
than
and a pretty face.
Yeah, but he is really good. And
he is,
from what
actually.
I've seen of some clips on Twitter, he's going to delve a bit more into the acting.
Okay.
It's going to go places that you don't necessarily expect.
Yeah.
I finished Welcome to Wrexham Season 2, finally.
How many are there of that? Just two?
Currently two, but the third one's out next month.
Oh, whenever you have that on and I'm just sort of pottering around in the background, sometimes it makes me cry.
Thing is, I was watching the final episode, which follows the end of the 2022-2023 season. And I knew what happened, because obviously it was ages ago. Mm. But I was still like, I was watching the final episode last night. I was like holding my breath. I was like, oh God, because when football is tense, and I know this isn't particularly a stereotypical gay thing, but I do quite like football.
I'm sure there's plenty of gay football fans.
When it's tense, it's horrific. Like that feeling of when you're up against, like you have to win or you have to score another goal to get to where you want. Like, you know, when you watch, like when England have done the World Cup semi-finals and we look, oh, there's nothing, oh, yeah, there's nothing worse. And I
you
also
transform when you watch football. I know, as I do. Well. It's really strange. Yeah. It's like seeing a different person.
Can't wait for the Euros this year. And I've also decided to do a House of the Dragon rewatch. So I've resigned myself to the fact that I'm never going to get you to watch it.
That's not necessarily true.
I don't. Or not in the time frame I want to.
No, I just don't want to watch it. Yeah, you want me to have already watched it. Is the case.
Well, it's the second season's coming out in June, so you know.
Oh, I'm not gonna watch it before then.
Well, exactly. But the reason I am doing a rewatch is I am currently reading the book that it's based on, Fire and Blood by George R. R. Martin. And I've really got into reading again this year so far. And
you saying that just then, sorry to interrupt.
Is that what you're going to say? Me,
that meme from, was it the Oscars?
Yeah.
And it says seals.
Yeah. I knew what you were going to say there.
That's silly.
But yeah, I've decided to do a rewatch. And again, this is the kind of fantasy I love. And I hate that Game of Thrones kind of bottled the ending in the end, because I love fantasy with such political intrigue. And reading the book, which starts well before the period that we see in the House of the Dragon, but I've now actually got to the part in the book past where season one ends, so I'm in the future.
Oh, so now you're reading.
So now I'm gonna sit now I'm,
mystery.
I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see that in the next few seasons.
How exciting.
But yeah, really, really like it. And can't wait for season two, but I'm just gonna slowly watch that when I fancy it.
Yeah.
Because I'm watching quite a few other bits as well.
Yeah.
We need to pick up Masters of the Air.
Yeah, we've got a couple of episodes left, haven't we?
I think it's still getting released. It's
is it?
Done.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
So we're going to fall behind.
We do still need to pick it up.
We were at our friends, although one of them avoided us and went to London.
Yeah.
So we watched Shogun. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, I thought you were going to ask me about it.
I fell asleep.
You haven't yet.
But that's not because I thought it was crap. It was very good. But
are you going to ask me what I've watched?
Well, I'm segueing in.
That's you're just taking everything I was going to say.
Sorry, go on.
Well, so we went to our friend's house for the weekend to celebrate the release of Dune Part 2. Shout out Josh, thanks for a great weekend. And we watched Shogun, the first episode on the night, and it was really, really good.
What people are likening that a bit to Game of Thrones.
Disney?
It's on Disney Plus.
On
yeah.
Disney Plus, yeah. It was really good, actually. I like that kind of feudal Japan set. Why couldn't I get my words out then? Feudal Japan setting.
Is it early 17th century? I think the title card said it's 1600, didn't
yes,
it?
Yes, 16 something to. Yeah, it was that. And it's basically set, I think the kind of character that we're following is the first or one of the first Englishmen to arrive in Japan, is what I've gathered so far. Very much Japanese dialogue for the most part, apart from the Englishman who can't speak Japanese. I think there's a few kind of Portuguese and Spanish characters knocking around as well. And yeah, it looks really...
So are you going to continue dramatic. That?
I would appreciate if you don't watch ahead without me.
Well, I'm probably...
But
gonna...
if you start doing that, then I'm...
Never going to see
anymore.
Never
going to see it.
Well, I'm probably going to rewatch episode one.
Yeah, you do need to do that.
Because I think I saw solidly 20 minutes and then my eyes were going a little bit on and off.
Yeah, it was late at night. We had just watched Dune and then spent hours talking about it as well, so...
No, it right? wasn't.
Oh, it was the night before,
right,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, my timeline's all over the place. yeah, that's all I have to say on Shogun for now.
Okay.
Also watched Lilo and Stitch while we were there just for something to fill the afternoon with, and it was just gorgeous. So many years since I've seen it.
And I it fell was, asleep during well that cute. As well.
You did.
God. Love it.
You just came up on the sofa and was like, just move over a bit, and then yeah. you were asleep 2 minutes later.
I did see about half of it.
It was nice, though.
I do like Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah. And for those interested in my franchise rewatches, James Bond 007 watch through. I've watched Goldfinger.
Goldfinger!
Which is, yeah, fun.
Although you didn't review it very highly,
no,
I don't recall.
I found. Well, it's obviously got all of the kind of classic Bond ingredients. Great, fine, no qualms. I think by the third one, they also got a bit more confident with the kind of gadgets Bond was getting, which was fun. Probably had a bit of budget and some product placement and stuff. Pussy Galore is and will always be the most hilarious Bond girl name ever. And I also really liked her character. And then Sean Connery is forcing himself upon her. And I was like, no, I don't want to watch this. She said no so many times. And I was like, this is just uncomfortable to view. And I know I'm 60 years in the future from its release. But like, come on, dude. Not cool. So yeah. I had to knock it down a little bit on the reviews.
Oh, due to that?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Obviously, it being a product of its time, whatever. But, you know, that's what I've got to say on that.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's gone on in the news?
So, news is a bit dry at the minute, because I think a lot of, like, and trailers as well, when we get to that, I think a lot of stuff came out trailers-wise in the Super Bowl and then other things. But I thought this was quite interesting, because I read a report that basically we've done a trailer trash or treasure on Alex Garland's new film Civil War, and it's been the timing of the film is being criticized a little bit because we're in an election year. There's probably quite a good chance that there could be some political violence again.
Yeah.
Some people are just arguing, is it a little bit too close to home? But we've said, like, that looks like a film that could be in a few years' time.
I almost think if they've chosen election year release on purpose, I wouldn't be surprised.
Mm. Helps because, with the marketing.
I mean, it's good for marketing anyway. But also, like, people who make art like to do provocative things.
What's
with
the
it.
Phrase?
Life imitating art
or the yeah. other way around?
Well, I think if this does turn out to be somewhat prophetic, it'll definitely be life imitating art.
But I thought, when people are having a bit of a whinge, and I thought it was a bit of a slow news day, because obviously someone's wrote quite a big piece on the Hollywood Reporter website about it, I thought, well, what we should all do is we should all just treat it as a bit of a warning.
Mm. Well, that's what I wonder. Maybe this yeah. year they're like, let's just let people know what they might be getting in for.
Because Trump is now definitely the Republican.
Is that, like, official confirmed?
Well, Nikki Chris. Haley's dropped out yesterday, or today.
Was she the only remaining contender? Yeah. Right, brilliant.
And he's winning all the primaries.
Cracking.
So, you know, it's quite... Yeah, watching the trailer, I've now seen the trailer on the big screen, and I was like, oh, yeah, that looks a bit close to home.
It does. It feels a bit like confronting, doesn't it, when you see the trailer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But...
Gosh, well, I think it'll be quite a tense watch, actually.
It will be.
At first, I thought it was going to be a bit of like a... not silly... Just like one of those kind of action-y films that you put on.
I don't think Alex Garland does that kind of thing.
No, but the more I'm seeing of it, the more I'm thinking about it, the more the world is doing what the world does, I'm like, oh, actually,
it might
be a bit
This is A24
fresh.
As well.
Yeah.
Who have committed to starting to spend a bit more on films, which can be seen in this trailer.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's not like a big studio.
No.
action film, you know, like those daft White House Downs or all those kind
of
things.
Well, that's what I thought it might have been like initially.
No, definitely not.
But then, you know, we're seeing a bit more of it.
Would you call it speculative fiction?
Oh, that's a fun genre. I hope that's correct.
So do I, because I like sound that. Clever if it is.
Sound very clever.
Yeah. Just thought it'd be interesting to discuss that.
And it was.
Thank you. Well, what a time we've had. I was looking at you to do that.
No, and I was giving
but
you
now
the
it's eyes. Time to cast our minds into the future and get excited for what's coming up in the world of film and TV. It's time now for Trailer Trash or Treasure. And what have we got this time, Ned?
We've got a film called The Bike Riders.
Yes. So as I alluded to in the previous segment, trailers are a bit slow at the minute. But I picked this because it came out recently and it was a film that got delayed during the SAG-AFTRA strikes.
Mm-hmm.
I think it even screened at Leeds Film Festival and then obviously then they moved it back. Yeah. But I thought the nice segue to what's going on in pop culture at the minute is Austin Butler. And Austin Butler is very much front and centre in this film. So I thought, let's give it a watch. So
the link to this trailer will be in the show notes. Yeah. So if you would like to pause now and watch along with us, come back as soon as you've seen it. We will see you after the sparkles.
We will.
Oh, I think that looks a bit good.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Fun fact, this is the film that Austin Butler wasn't allowed to shave his hair for
filming June 2.
Because he was going straight to film this with Jack Nicholson straight after. So I like the 1960s premise.
Yep, love that. Really like a biker gang type scenario as well. It's a bit Sons of Anarchy.
Mm.
Jodie Comer in there. Tom Hardy. Oh my God, the things Tom Hardy can do to his voice.
I'm not the biggest fan of him.
You're not?
No, sadly not.
Why not?
I think he can do a lot to his voice, but I think he can't do a lot else.
I think he's at his best when he's not playing somebody from London.
Yeah, I mean, I am open to it, but I just get a bit, we're getting Tom Hardy again.
Fair enough.
But no, it seems to follow a kind of motorcycle club that over a course of time go from being, you know,
a bike enthusiast
to a violent organised crime group. And it looks dramatic. It looks like an adult drama.
It does.
Not things that we see often in the cinemas these days, which I think is quite nice that it will
you
be.
Don't think?
No, I think a lot of these are kind of given to streaming these days. But yeah, I'm pretty sure. I would love if Jodie Comer just totally broke character and just did a proper Scouse accent. That would really have made me laugh. She's not going to.
Obviously not.
I fucking love Jodie Comer. I think Same. She's great. But yeah, it's got a big ensemble cast of the likes of Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, Tom Hardy, who we've mentioned, but also Michael Shannon, Mike Fast, Norman Reedus, Boyd Holbrook, and many, many more.
I'm not sure I've heard of any of them apart from the three we already mentioned.
Some people might have. So
I mean, some people probably have, yeah.
But yeah, it's based on a book.
When's
it
out?
June, I think.
Cinemas?
Yes.
Great. See you in June. Oh, June. It's like being back at Manchester Arena.
Nah. When we went to see Hans Zimmer. Yeah. Well, and now for this week's headline feature, Femme, coming up right after this quick break.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Femme.
Do you want to give us a synopsis before we dive in?
Sure. Gets straight into it. This synopsis.
Oh, that was the synopsis.
No.
This film gets straight into it.
No. After a traumatic gay bashing near the club he performs in drag at, Jules seeks revenge on the perpetrator, Preston, who he has previously noticed checking him out outside the club.
I like it. Very, like, doesn't dive into it, but sets the scene.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess maybe I would like to start at just kind of leading on directly from that synopsis. Before we do dive into more of the where this film goes. I will say that it really, that gay bashing that happens.
Oh, just before we get too into that, maybe a short content warning for some listeners who may find any topics of discussion.
Yeah, that's probably
distressing.
Yeah. But what I will say is, and you hear it about it a lot, but it's so sad to see how a homophobic attack completely changes somebody.
Yeah.
And almost puts them, I kind of say it almost puts them back into the closet. Because, like, as we meet before the actual gay bashing, we see Jules in drag.
Yeah.
Oh, as what's the drag?
Aphrodite.
Yeah.
Oh,
and she's amazing. And everyone's
stunning,
obsessed with her.
Gorgeous.
And then this happens to her, and she completely reverts to kind of going completely back into a shell.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've seen many, well, probably we have, but I can't recall them, films where that psychological journey is properly explored.
No, and I don't think there's much screen time given to that experience in LGBT cinema very much, which I suppose I can kind of get, because sometimes people get a bit like trauma fatigue.
But it's an important part of this story.
Yeah,
and obviously it sets sets the rest of the story kind
it does
of going.
Actually, this is a really interesting and layered story the more I thought about it.
It is, and I think it's a film that kind of takes really well where it takes you through the character's psyche and the decisions that they're making as well.
Yeah.
And what I really like from it as well is this is anyone could watch this film, but it doesn't shy away from some of the aspects of queer culture that some people won't get.
Yeah, or just have never even thought about, like,
yeah,
totally
so like,
not on your radar, very much under the, what am I trying to say? Underground queer culture.
Yeah, because obviously one of the main parts of the, like, the next bit of the story is that, is it Jules?
It is
Jules.
Keep
forgetting the name. Jules spots Preston, who was the perpetrator of the attack,
yeah,
in a gay sauna.
So the setup pre that was, Jules went out for a cig after his fierce drag show as Aphrodite, spotted Preston across the road under like streetlight looking at the club, and then he walked away.
I don't
Jules.
Think Preston, I that kind of was a bit lost on me, because, you know, when the before the homophobic attack happens, when Preston and his group of friends have followed Jules into that little off license.
But they didn't follow.
No, but
in.
they just were there.
Went in afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah. And Jules is like, well, I saw you checking me out. I didn't really read that as checking me out. I just thought you could read it as always looking and thinking, what the hell's going on in that club kind of thing. So I mean, it doesn't really matter because it doesn't affect where the story goes.
No.
But yeah, it fully doesn't shy away from, you know.
But that was the first interaction they had, was like eye contact across the road, basically.
It doesn't shy away from sauna culture.
No.
Doesn't shy away from sex, from sexuality.
God, no, there's plenty of sex.
I mean, the characters have a lot of sex, but we also see a lot of Jules watching
porn.
I was like, I recognise that porn star, a few of them.
Declan!
I know. It's like, oh, that's so-and-so. No, because I was mostly thinking, I wonder if they've had to get their permission to use it in a film. Probably. Yeah. So basically, it feels like, and I'm not sure if I say this in the correct sense, feels like a bit of a Stockholm Syndrome type film.
I thought that it was going in that direction until the end.
Yeah.
So, as retribution for his attack, Jules gets the idea from the porn site to try and film the sex that they're having without Preston's knowledge.
Yeah.
And, like, out him on a porn site.
Yeah.
As, like, a public humiliation thing.
Kind of thing.
And it was kind of all about that. But then there were times where you sort of started to feel like maybe they were actually having a bit of feelings between each other, because Preston was quite clearly, like, into Jules. I know he had a very toxic, insecure, masculine type way of showing his feelings and wasn't a very good...
But that's what I really liked about it. It was complex. It wasn't one note. Like,
it wasn't, know, he's just...
He's like, oh, he's attacked him, he's horrible. But then it's like, oh, I think they might be developing feelings for one another. Even
it gave
though
them both
every
really
time
good depth.
Jules is going back to his home thinking, how am I going to carry out this plan of doing this, you kind of, not revenge porn, but like...
Well, I've actually got the words revenge porn written down because I wanted to...
Is it revenge porn? Well, it's not
it
revenge porn in the sense that...
Using porn as a form of revenge. It's not like...
It's not...
It's
maybe
different
it
to leaking your sex tape. It is producing porn without the consent of one of the people in it, which I suppose is... I think this, if, you know, if it ever made it into some sort of legal case, this would qualify as revenge porn.
Yeah,
definitely.
I mean, I think, and what was interesting is that Jules obviously goes into this and befriends him, starts dating him, hooking up with him, blah-de-blah. I think Jules obviously goes into that original journey thinking, I am just in it to get the revenge that I want. But then I think she begins to feel, or he... doesn't really matter if it's a drag queen. He begins to feel sorry for Preston. And I think that's where I got as well. Because he's horrible. He really is horrible. But he's obviously not been in a world where he can express his sexuality in a safe space.
Yeah.
His friends kind of take the piss out of gay people. Not like in a really...
Just
I almost thought like if he
do.
Told his mates that he was gay, they'd be like, all right, fair. Like, it didn't feel like... But it really kind of went in.
I don't know if that's the case, because they were all filming and laughing and jeering as he was kicking the shit out of Jules
See,
at the start.
Some of them weren't, though. Some of them did tell him to get off. And like,
I mean, eventually.
I know.
They let him give him a good beating first, and then they were like, all right, you've probably done enough now. Don't want to kill him.
But I think the way it explores those gender archetypes and, like, how it that vulnerability that people have to do with the sexuality when they can't express it. I do think Jules does begin to just feel a bit sorry for him and totally conflicted in
the pity.
Should
card.
I do this? Should I do this? And then, you know, it does it really, really well. And I think it's an incredibly tense film.
And you know what, as well, actually, I think that was, I was starting to get a bit worried for Jules if he'd carried out this, kind of plan to put their video online, but at the last minute stopped the upload and went and did like a drag comedy act about it, which I thought was a way healthier way to deal with the emotional trauma that he'd gone through, and probably felt a lot more empowering than posting.
Yeah, he probably thought, well, I've done what I've done it up until the actual
I think
point,
the thing started not... when he was feeling his absolute shittest, and opportunity arose when he saw Preston in the sauna, and it kind of got away from him. And I think just before he entered like the point of no return, after he's gone through all of this, he was like, no, actually, I'm going to do it my way, and got back in drag again. And I thought that was the best way it could have gone for Jules.
And I think he got totally in over his head as well.
Definitely.
Like when Preston came to Jules'
so
flat
tense.
And started meeting some of Jules' friends, and like one of Jules' best friends obviously thought, well, I'll invite her to his birthday.
I did not like that best friend.
So that best friend, I didn't particularly like, and I don't think he's a very good actor.
I don't think I liked the performance.
He played the original Jamie in the original cast of
Everyone's
Talking About Jamie. Yeah.
Right.
He was very good at that, but I don't think, from what I've seen of his acting, I was like, I don't think your stage acting translates well to film. But
maybe
luckily
it was just
he wasn't
this
in it
film.
A lot. But yeah, I didn't, but him kind of, I was like, oh, Jules, you're so in over your head here. Like, your friends have met him, invited you to the his birthday party, where Jules kind of decides to get back into drag at this point, and Preston sees it. But then even then, when
Do you know what really irritated me about his mate? He invited Preston to the club, knowing Jules was in drag, and knowing that Preston didn't know he did drag. And I just think that's a dick move.
Well, we get that.
Because he was, like, doing it on purpose to sabotage the relationship.
I don't know his friend's name, but no, I can't recall it, but it doesn't really matter. But we get the impression that he also has feelings for Jules, so maybe he was trying to nip it in the bud.
Yeah, but still, big dick move.
Oh, like, yeah, definitely. Not cool. Yeah. But, even when Preston turns up at the birthday party and, you know, he looks all coy and he's like...
Oh, and he's got a little present.
I know, he's got a present. I'm like, why am I feeling sorry for this?
I know.
But that's the kind of films I want to do.
It is
like
a really interesting film because you feel all of these different kind of things for characters on both sides of the coin.
I think Jules is conscious about, you know, angel on one shoulder, devil on the other kind of thing. We're kind of experiencing that with Jules.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's done very well, because we're on that emotional journey with him.
It's like really human. Like, there isn't a good guy and a bad guy here. I mean, there's obviously the perpetrator of a horrendous hate crime. But it kind of, it shows like a bit, it's not like this person only does bad things and this person only does good things. And that's what I think makes it a really, really interesting watch.
Because Jules is planning to do a bad thing.
Exactly.
So they're both
flawed, aren't they? It's not about the right and wrong binary. It's about all of the grey area in between and how we're all kind of messy, complex people. And there are people who let their messy complexness make them do bad things, and there are people who are tempted by that and choose not to.
And I think they're both a victim of society, but in their own form.
Yeah, definitely.
I will say, stylistically, about some of the films, I thought the visuals were really cool, and I liked how it used some of its lighting.
Really enjoyed the locations.
Yeah.
Like, I think that living situation that Jules has, that like artsy, definitely wasn't built to be
a
dwelling, but is a house share with loads of kind of queer chosen family vibes. Very cute, really fun, loads of stuff all over the place. That felt fun. And some of the places that they go to have secret sex also were really interesting choices of location, because they were like woods, random laybys, something that looked like you know when they sort of half build a building and then stop and it's no longer a building site, but it's also not a building
looks
yet.
Like somewhere where a rave would be held, like a secret rave. Yeah.
Just random stuff like that was fun.
And that one of those locations where Jules is actually attempting to film it, that was a tense sequence.
Oh, yeah, it was.
When Preston catches him.
Yeah.
But... And what that's also interesting as well, like Preston... And I mean, you probably wouldn't even think that somebody has infiltrated your life who you attacked, because it's it's not likely to happen.
Well, because the attack happened while he was in drag, Preston had absolutely no idea that it was Jules.
Yeah. Yeah. And that final scene when they're in, you know,
in the club.
He's been to the club and then he goes behind the scenes to confront him.
Oh.
And they end up,
I really thought he was going to die.
So did I. But I'm quite glad the way it did end.
Same.
Because it leans into that vulnerability of Preston again, where he ends up just being a ball of
emotion
on the floor crying. And I thought, I'm quite glad that that's the way it ends. And it does kind of end where it leaves you wanting more, in the sense that you want to know what happens. But then on reflection, I've kind of thought,
that's, we've seen the journey we need to see, and I don't need to see anymore. I think it's open to interpretation what happens afterwards.
We got to the point where Jules found resolution, and just because we don't know what happens next to them, like, they're still, they're literally out the back at a party that's going on. Like, there's lots of other characters that could come in and, like, tie up the story nicely, or there could be an arrest or any of this, but I don't think we need any of that, because we're not there to watch what happens to Preston. We're there to see Jules
kind of reclaim who she was.
Yeah.
I will say it was very well acted by Nathan Stewart Jarrett as Jules.
My God,
and George
yes.
Mackay.
And I always used Preston. To fancy Nathan Stewart Jarrett in Misfits.
Oh, that's what he...
Yeah, and still fancied him in this. and George, is it Mackay? I first saw him, I think, in Captain Fantastic. And I fancied him in that as well.
Good.
Couldn't get over his tattoos in this one, though. Didn't like them.
I will say, good on him for doing a role like this. I know it's acting and stuff, but like, he didn't need to do quite a niche queer film where...
It's quite challenging, really.
Yeah, and he was horrible, but, you know, having lots of sex and stuff. Like, I always think it's quite, must be quite an interesting decision to go into that, but I do think he always comes across a bit like Paul Mescal, as a bit of an ally anyway.
Oh, definitely.
So, but yeah, I thought it was interesting to, you know, for him to go from to a big film recently like 1917 to quite a small indie queer film.
Mm.
He was in Pride, though.
I don't remember him in Pride.
He was the main one.
Was he?
The younger one.
Was he?
Who, like, moves to wherever, like, makes all those friends.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe
he's gay himself.
Need to rewatch Pride then.
Let me have a look. No, he's not. He's married. He married his long-term girlfriend.
Oh. Congratulations.
Yeah. He's quite politically driven, I think, as well, because there's a bit on his Wikipedia about how he signed became one of almost 100 famous figures in the UK to sign a letter to the government in order for them to take immediate action against Iran's executions. So I think he's a posh boy, though, isn't he? So it's quite interesting to see that, to play this, like...
I guess so. I don't know much about him, actually.
Well, he quite often plays, like, someone in a war and quite well-spoken. Not just 1917,
but... he's a posh boy, though.
No, I think he is. Think he is.
Okay. Grand.
But no, it must be nice to be in a film like 1917 and really come to kind of recognition and then think, I've done a big one, I can do,
few
I can make
ones.
Some creative choices and do
things.
But yeah, I would say they were both very, very good.
Yeah.
In this.
I think they did really well in pretty much every scene. This is probably testament to the director more than anything. Making it so tense, like you felt at risk in most of those scenes throughout the film.
Queer people have probably met a guy like Preston before.
Yeah, probably.
And, you know, a bit of a joke or a bit of a lad who you think
might
be gay.
But he was also, in his group of lad friends... He was the one that they all shit on all the time.
Yeah, he was a bit of an outcast in his own group, wasn't
he?
Which is,
like,
not what he plays up to at the start.
He was the one, like, who has to try a bit harder to be there.
Yeah.
Which is another reason I started to feel sorry for him. And then I was like, no, stop that.
But that's why it was so interesting. So interesting. Really liked it. I'm pretty much... at the end of my notes. Done about you.
Yeah, same.
Okie doke. Well, let's move on to our star ratings for this then.
Okay.
I went with 4.
Yeah, I went with 3.5, but I've talked myself up, so I'm going to go and edit my review because I think it actually is a 4-star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know we've talked
a
lot of spoilers
and
stuff,
well.
But we haven't... It's not necessarily a film that you can spoil.
I think it is.
No, it is, but you could still watch it after you've listened to this as well. So I will shout out that it's currently available on Netflix in the UK. Okay, well, now let's unsheathe the Gaydar. It's a wonderful piece of machinery devised by Ned's own hand, and we use it to rank all the films and TV we discuss based on their LGBTQ plus appeal. Let's see where the Gaydar ranks then.
Right. Obviously quite high up. We are...
This is going to be a really funny one to compare it to some of the others. I just think, yeah, because it's so gritty and...
It's nice.
I imagine you're going to go, it's between Barbie and somewhere else, and then you're like, oh, God.
It's higher up than Barbie.
I would say so, yes.
It's higher up than Red, White and Royal Blue.
Yes.
And Good Grief.
Good Grief. Yes.
It's above Good Grief.
What's it below?
Below Nimona.
Mm.
Passages. Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Yeah, it's up there in that kind of mix, yeah, isn't it? It shows kind of one... Well, no, it's a very nuanced look at different aspects of sexuality, but it is kind of the G in the LGBT, I would say. But I do think a lot of queer people would really get so into this film because they'll have either been in some similar-ish... Obviously, this is like a dramatisation and taken to the next level, but I do think people will resonate with some things that are in this.
Yeah,
because we've all met a Preston.
It's definitely one to approach with caution.
Yeah,
it's
quite heavy.
Yeah, there's a lot to take in.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's not too long, so
no,
it's
I
not.
I think it was only like 1 hour and 40.
Yeah, it's nice. A really good runtime because it's not. It's quite intense to watch. But because it doesn't run too long, it's like you can digest it quite well, I think.
Yeah,
and I've been thinking about it a lot since we watched it, actually.
Yeah, and actually having this discussion, because I think we're about a week since we watched it, and I could, you know, it's one you could debate with your friends and talk about different perspectives that you saw, because I think maybe people might see different things, you know.
Yeah.
Some people might lean into Jules's motivation a bit more, or some people might feel a bit more sorry for Preston and all that kind of thing.
This comes in that category of films I watch that if I was like a student age,
yeah,
I could quite easily imagine including this as source material for an essay or something. You know
yes.
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those. It's got a lot to think about. So watch to enjoy, but also watch to reflect.
What does the queer film Femme tell us about modern day gender archetypes and masculinity? That could be like a...
Sure.
Discuss. 5,000 words.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah. One sec.
I'm giving you the eyes now.
Words. And that's all for this time. If you have enjoyed this episode of Gaze on Film, please subscribe, rate and comment on your podcast platform of choice. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram. We are at Gaze on Film Pod, and you can check out our Letterboxd accounts. Links to those are in the show notes. We would love to hear your thoughts, so please do feel free to drop us a message. I have been Ned.
And I have been Declan.
And this has been Gaze on Film. Thanks for listening.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.